with your list. You know, some people are like, well, I'm only going to give you the bare minimum of what you asked for, but you sent along many. So,
oh, that was me trying to tamper it down. I would have sent you 20 more.
Well, thanks. Why the first song? Can you tell us a little bit about why you picked the first song, Kate?
I love the song, and the lyrics are really about living now and taking steps forward, and it just really set the themes of the book. So, yeah. I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Well, thanks. And Kate, can you remind me who's the artist and the title of the song too?
For the first one?
Yes.
It's Laces, I believe.
Yes.
But I'll have to look back at that.
That's
now
okay.
You're really catching me here, but I'm pretty sure it's Open for Business by The Laces, which I don't know any other songs by them, but I really love her voice. It's Laces, all capital. And it's called Open for Business, and it's kind of about opening yourself up to the world.
This is exactly what How About Now, your latest book out with Harper Perennial in 2025, is definitely, I can see why you chose it, as a lead-off song, Kate. So thanks. Before we go any further, I just want to read your short bio that's on your website, katebayer.com. And Kate, just to double check, I'm pronouncing your name correctly and everything.
Yeah, just like the animal. Yeah.
Oh, bear. Okay, like bear. Okay. I think I was giving a little too much A there. And just everybody, today you're on True Free Form with Living Writers here with me and Kate Bear, because I don't know, we are doing the sound check together, and I'm meeting Kate just as all of you are too. So welcome on board, listeners, for this really wintry day in Michigan. Kate, how is it with you? Because are you in Pennsylvania?
I'm in Pennsylvania, but I was just in Michigan for my book tour, and I've never been there before, and I must come back in the summer.
Oh, definitely. Where did the tour take you? And I will read your bio, but where did the book tour take you?
You don't need to read my bio, but I was in Traverse City.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. So I was right by the water, and it was just really beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, that area of Michigan is it's one of my favorites. And I was going to say, had I known you were anywhere in the vicinity, I would have tried to get you down to Ann Arbor to do this in person.
But yeah, absolutely.
Maybe next book, Kate.
Maybe next time. Absolutely. So
here is the bio on Kate's website. Kate Bear is a writer and a number one New York Times bestselling author of many books with wonderful titles, I might add. Her work has also been published in The New Yorker, Literary Hub, Huffington Post, and The New York Times. And Kate, yeah, like the titles of your books, What Kind of Woman? I Hope This Finds You Well. And Yet. And Now, How About Now? How have you always had a relationship, or luck, maybe I should say, with titles?
I really love titling my poems. I don't know if titling my books, that hasn't been maybe the same experience, but I love to title the poems. It's one of my favorite parts because I feel like there's room for playfulness and kind of a wink with a lot of the titles of the pieces. So that's where I really love titling things. I usually write the poem first almost 99% of the time. I write the poem first and then title it. For the books, that's been the same experience, except for this last one. I knew the title before I wrote it. But for all the other ones, I really worked with the editors to find a title. That process, usually the publisher would like to have input on the title. But for this last one, I did title it before I wrote it.
And was that also because How About Now, the title poem, actually plays an important part in the structure, the arc of the book?
Yeah, I think so. Or just a theme of what I thought I was going to write about, for sure, yes.
Oh, so do you mean, I think I don't understand just yet, Kate. I'm sorry. It's probably just me and my wintry brain at the moment. But with when you chose the title How About Now, for the book, you had already written the whole, put the manuscript together.
So that's right. Right. That's how it was for the first three books, but not for this one. I actually had the title for this book before I wrote any piece for it.
It
was the reverse from all the other books. I had written the entire book before we picked a title. But for this book, I knew I wanted the book to be titled How About Now, and I wrote the pieces after the fact.
And do you think it's connected to making the book about this particular time of your life? Because the poems are so intimate, and the lead poem in the book is titled Self-Addressed. So it feels like, in a way, the reader is opening in to Kate Bear, the poet's world, or the narrator's world, the voice of the book. It's so intimate, Kate.
Yeah, I did not order this book completely alone. I don't know if you know Maggie Smith, the writer and poet. She's a wonderful writer and has many books. I know Maggie Smith is also the name of an English actress.
Yes.
Who has passed away in the last few years. But Maggie Smith, the writer and poet who lives in Ohio, she actually edited this book and helped me order it. And she was insistent that poem came first. And I do think it is really a great starting point.
And this was after, people and friends like this, Kate, are so, they're so critical to have, right?
Absolutely.
In your world as a poet, as a writer, as a maker. How so? Why?
Yeah, I think one, and maybe the most important reason why that's so important is just for the behind the scenes, honestly, from more than anything else. That has been just a very integral part of my writing life and talking about publishing and talking about those behind the scenes things and connecting on that and the difficulties there with, you know, promoting your work and dealing with your publisher. So that has been honestly the most helpful. But then, of course, with the actual writing, a lot of my beta readers are also writers themselves. And, you know, being in that world and also having a fascination with language is priceless.
It is. There's certain people. I love how you call them the beta readers. I haven't heard that before, Kate, but I love it. You know, the people that you can trust who will also tell you things that you might not have thought of or might not even want to hear, but you can weigh it and then you can decide.
Right. Yes.
And are you also one of these beta readers then for Maggie Smith, your friend who's the poet and the editor?
I am so lucky enough to get her work early. Yes. She's an incredible writer and has a book coming out, I believe, that hasn't come out yet this spring. So definitely look for that.
Okay. So shout out for Maggie, Maggie Smith and her upcoming book. And also I'll do a shout out to thank Heather, your publicist too, for connecting us, Kate, as well, at Harper Perennial. Were all your books published with this particular publisher? Because it's interesting that you're talking about that being, you know, because it is. It feels like such a separate world from the actual making of the poems and envisioning the books and then working to make them come into the world.
Yeah. I often describe it to others. I kind of have these two hats I wear. I have my writing hat that I wear, which I got to put on back on this January. And I have this other hat that I wear, which is I call the circus monkey hat.
And I like that hat too.
Yeah, and whichever one I'm wearing, I usually long for the other, which I think really makes sense. So the whole time I was on tour, being a circus monkey, and I love that hat. I love live events. I love meeting readers. It is truly one of the greatest joys of my life. But while I'm wearing that, especially on a plane at 3 a.m., I'm thinking, oh, I can't wait to put on my writing hat, writer's hat, which is a much different life. I write in a vacuum. It's very insular. I'm in my office right now. It's just a completely different world. I think the publishing side of it and the logistics side of it definitely fits under the circus monkey hat, which has its pros and cons. And like I said, the biggest pro is meeting readers and doing those live events and having conversations on stages with other authors and friends. That's a really wonderful part. Some of the harder parts is, you know, having to do all the promotion and kind of figure out the logistics of contracts or all just the nitty gritty stuff, which is just part of the job. But there's those two hats that I think most writers wear.
And as for the nitty gritty part of it, Kate, do you have help like from an agent or do you do it yourself? Like, is it more like you are navigating like the contracts and?
Yeah, I do have an agent, and I think if you go that there's so many different publishing routes now in 2026. But if you're in the more of the traditional publishing route, which I am because I'm with Harper, you need an agent. Yes.
Great. And then, so Kate, with the self-addressed, would you mind reading that lead poem for us in your office where you're speaking to us from? Do you have your book in front of you?
I do. I'd love to read it for you. This is called Self-Addressed. The problem is the new life costs you the old one. How long it's taken you to understand the difference between letting go and cutting through the rind. How do I look away now that I have seen you? It's the fourth day of October. Take my hand. This is the world.
Thank you, Kate. So that does feel like an opening poem. I can see why Maggie Smith was lobbying to put it first. how do you feel it now about it now as the lead poem?
I think because, you know, the book is done so much before it actually comes out. So it's been the lead poem for me for a while. And so I can't imagine it anywhere else. And I do think it's a great starting point. And I always love reading this one.
Oh, Kate. Okay. Thanks for reading it for us. We're going to take a short break right now, hear another one of your song picks, and then we'll be back. Today on Living Writers, Kate Bear is joining us via phone from Pennsylvania. I'm T. Hetzel. We've got Reverend Andrew Engineering. We'll be right back. Welcome back. If you're just tuning in, you're you're just in time to catch Living Writers with the poet Kate Bear. Kate, thanks so much for making the time to talk today. I love your book, How About Now?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here.
So, Kate, let's talk a little bit about your epigraphs that you put at the beginning of How About Now? Because I love that they're from two vastly different sources. I wondered if you could talk about them and about why they're like a window into like stepping into the book.
Yeah, so the first one's from Cher, who is an icon and someone who I've always just admired for always being true to herself and not letting anyone else kind of influence how she presents to the world. I saw a clip from her farewell tour concert on YouTube where she said, "Do everything you can do now." And I thought, oh, that would be the perfect way to begin this book. And so I included her. And then the other one is from James Joyce in a letter to his wife. And it says, "Some of it is ugly, obscene, and bestial. Some of it is pure and holy and spiritual. All of it is myself," which I really liked in contrast to Cher, just to talk about how kind of with that message of how about now, it doesn't mean how about now be perfect, but how about now be true to yourself, no matter what that looks like.
Yeah. And I love that there's like Cher and James Joyce on the same page and that you have the dates.
Same.
You know? And that it also, when you see it, as you start reading the poems in How About Now, you really feel it. You're like, yeah. This is why these are like two sentinels outside the gates of the book or so. You talk about there's like relationships in here. You talk about the body a lot, about the body at midlife even. I love how one of the titles, when you were talking about titles just a little bit ago, I was thinking about the humor in the one that the wild jam perimenopause, wild yam perimenopause, does it work? Reddit title. Yeah. Do you mind flip? And you know what? I should tell everyone, this is there's a first time for everything. And Kate, thanks for being such a good sport also. And everybody out there listening, we always talk about freeform radio. And today on Living Writers, with Kate's grace and patience, I drove here through there's a kind of a wintry, like mini blizzard going on out there. And I left the house really early just to make sure I got here, et cetera. And to my horror, when I pulled in and found a parking spot easily, I did not have my bag with my book and all my notes.
Oh my goodness.
And so I don't have your book of poems in front of me. So I've tried to recreate some of my notes here. But Kate, if you don't mind, I on the drive in, I actually was thinking, God, I love these poems, and laughing to myself, oh, maybe I'll ask Kate just to read her book the whole show. And then now I'm thinking, I mean, be careful what you even joke about, right? Which I feel like is a poem in your book too. But Kate, would you mind taking us to the poem? It's like before the halfway point in the book, right?
I have it right here in front of me. It's no problem.
Okay.
Yes, this one's called Wild Yam Cream Perimenopause, Does It Work? Reddit. And I loved titling this one because it was an exact Google search of mine. And I don't know about you, but I love to put the word Reddit on the end of my questions because AI could never replicate the opinions of the human race on Reddit.
Yes. Brilliant. Yes. So that was your actual search. That's like what you typed in. Okay.
Yes.
And then did you write, like, was this a case where you had the poem and then you put the title on? Or is this one where you actually had this title? Because the poem seems to have a different sort of feel to it than the title.
Yeah, this one I had the title first.
Would you mind reading the poem too?
Of course. What the mind imagines, the soul must learn to forgive. How could I have known time would chase me here? death felt more certain than finding myself midlife and full of symptoms, strapped to a sinking ship. Is it the ego or the unfinished business of my 20s that finds me begging? Yes, I have dreamt myself into a woman enough times to know it is a gift wrapped as a ticking bomb. Still, I must pick up my axe, sharpen what is left of this now mortal body, and claw my way back home.
Oh, thanks, Kate. Is that one you choose to read?
Yeah, I like to read this one, and I think the idea of it and even just the title is relatable to a lot of women who approach midlife and are finding themselves full of symptoms and doing those kind of Google searches and wading through a lot of grifting that happens, especially now when perimenopause has become kind of a buzzword, which has led to a lot of products being thrown our way that will solve all of our problems, like Wild Yam Cream, which I did buy and totally messed me up.
Oh, no. Okay.
So, no, don't buy it. Please don't buy it. So the answer to that is that it does not work. But, I don't mind reading this one at all. And I've had many women come up to me and say, that's very relatable.
And there's other poems in the book too, like in where you have placed this poem in the order, Kate. There's also I think it's next to the gynecology page, which
about pelvic floor therapy.
Sure. Oh yeah, pelvic floor therapy. Yes, which when I first heard about that, I was like, "What is this?" And then then it also seems to be omnipresent almost now. Well, if you're a woman, maybe.
I didn't know if I was going to keep this in the book, and my editor said this one's really depressing. I don't know if we should keep it in there, but it's opened up a lot of conversations. I've actually been able to write about this in essay form, my experience with pelvic floor therapy and prolapse. And again, it's another topic that women can really relate to. It's kind of an unspoken issue for a lot of people because there's a lot of shame around it. But
yes.
Like most topics, the sharing usually leads to Me Too and a feeling of community that is ultimately so helpful.
And it seems like, thank goodness people are talking about things more. Because as you said, like it can often feel shameful or you feel like it's intimate or it's so personal. But then I feel like now there has been a movement where women are, it is, like you said, it's commercialized, but women are more talking about it with each other. Like it seems like more than ever, not just even close friends, but I think even like, 5-10 years ago, close friends weren't talking about it as much as people feel more able to do now.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yes. And I find there's a lot of negativity about where we're going as a whole group of humans. But it's great to find those glimmers of hope. And one of those for sure is women being able to use their voice to talk about some of these things that were absolutely hidden before, like pelvic floor health.
Yes. And it'll be so amazing if, because it becomes more of the public conversation, maybe even then the health community will start studying women's health more even. We'll see what happens. We'll see.
Yes.
Stay tuned.
Yeah,
stay tuned. Well, it's so, it stands out to me, Kate, that you said that the poem almost didn't make it into How About Now? Because you were advised maybe it was maybe too depressing. That is so interesting to hear.
Yeah. I think what the sentiment behind that was that books like this, there's often a desire for shareable positive pieces. Which I do understand that want for poems full of hope. But the thing is, you know, half of all women who've given birth show signs of organ dissent. And so, I don't know. To me, it felt important to keep it in there. And I'm glad I did. Yeah.
Completely. And just to, I mean, I can't even believe, I mean, the poems do everything in the world. Poems are for joy. Poems are for solace. Poems are meant to be messengers of what life is, or to challenge you to think about something. So I'm so glad that you let it have a place in here, because I feel like that's part of life. Like,
absolutely.
I noticed also that at the start of the book, because of How About Now, you also dedicate the book to your parents. And your mom has like a line in one of the poems where, and I love this part, Kate, because there's humor and you're talking about something really serious, where your mom says, "I've got a poem for you," or "put this in a poem." And then you sort of slightly, the voice in the poem bristles at that, but she's talking about her friends dying and grief.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people can relate to not wanting their mother to give them advice on their work life. But the joke between my sister and I, and I know there are lots of memes on this, is that every time we see her, she has some really terrible news to tell us.
Oh, yeah.
And so we really laughed about that. But I like that little poem in there for her. But yeah, I did dedicate the book to my parents, and not just because you should dedicate a book to your parents before they die, but also I really did want to dedicate this one to them specifically, just because they have been so influential in that messaging to me my whole life. My dad worked at a meatpacking plant for 13 years while pursuing his dream of being on the radio and having a radio station, which he was able to do. And my mom was a sixth grade teacher my whole life while also pursuing a graduate degree. And
wow, what great models of the way to keep living and reinventing the self.
Yeah, I really I'm so appreciative of them and that model, and not even just their professional goals, but also their constant forward motion in their relationships and keeping up with their college friends and taking trips, and no matter what our financial situation, you know, kind of being curious and exploring the world. And I'm just very grateful for that model.
And I love how the things that you name, Kate, are actually things that come up in your poems too, like how many tabs you have open doing research for a family trip, even though finances are tight. Like it's all woven together. Let's take a short break, and then we'll come back and we get another half hour with poet Kate Bear, her latest book out with Harper Perennial, How About Now. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got Living Writers. We'll be back.
Thank you.
Welcome back. You've got Living Writers, and today I'm so happy to be speaking with Kate Bear, poet Kate Bear, via phone from Pennsylvania. And Kate, earlier you mentioned that you're talking to us from your office. So is this the place where you're making the poems? Do you like what's your writing process like?
Hi. Yes. Hi. I'm so happy to be here. Yeah. I have, you know, office hours that I do spend in here, to do a lot of the writing, but I will say that the meat of the poetry really comes from my real life, out in the world. You know, I'm constantly emailing myself, texting myself, writing in my notes app, writing things down on a piece of paper and shoving it under my office door, to then, you know, do the construction of that later. There's a poem in here called Marriage Poem, and there's a line that says, I love my life except for the noise of it. And I wrote that, I was on a walk with our dog. We live in the country, and I was taking my dog for a walk. She kind of runs in the fields next to us, and I was coming back across the front of my house coming home, and I looked in our big bay window and I saw my daughter playing the piano and my youngest on the floor playing Magna Tiles and my husband playing a card game with the other two. And I stopped and I was looking at them and I thought, wow, they're so beautiful. I don't want to go inside. And I quickly pulled out my phone and I wrote so many of just the phrases that would end up in that poem and emailed them to myself. And that's very typical for so many of the pieces in here. And then it's the time in my office kind of putting those, doing that real hard work of writing in the really not fun part, you know, deliberating over commas and trying to find sentence structure. I write so much by ear, so a lot of it is reading things out loud and trying to get the sound right. And yes, that does happen in here. Although it didn't always happen in my office. For 10 years, I lived somewhere else. I lived in a different town about an hour away and did not have my own office. I was living in about 1,200 square feet with five other people, so there was no room for an office there, and I wrote in Panera. Actually, I wrote my entire first book in Panera. I wrote my second book in my van during COVID, and then the last two books I've been able to write in my office, which is much cozier, and I do love it in here.
I love that each book also has its like location story to it. Like the van book, that's kind of amazing, Kate. I know that might have been like bad for like body mechanics or so.
Oh yeah, well it was a tough time for a lot of people. I mean, it was COVID. Yeah. I couldn't write in my house and I couldn't write in Panera, so I just sat in their parking lot and used their Wi-Fi. And just wrote it in my van, which was funny, for sure. I just kept turning the heat off and on.
Right.
Yeah, it was definitely a very specific time for a lot of people.
And thanks for talking about this poem earlier, too, the marriage poem, because throughout the book, there are the characters of your family ever present. And I think like you said, your dog, which I think is a golden retriever, which maybe I know from this particular poem that you just mentioned. Or no, it's from another poem where
it's from a poem called Today.
That's it.
Which is a poem about walking the dog in the winter.
Could you read that one, Kate? Would you mind reading?
I would love to. Yeah, this one's called Today. Today, in the blue eye of winter, we follow our retriever out to the backfield, where she presses her nose to the ground, tunneling snow and dirt. Adoration of the season, adoration of the minute. How simple it must be to wake up knowing who you are, what you want. No reason to dwell on lives we could have lived, stew in our personal disappointments. Still, we're not so different. There isn't much a long walk won't fix.
Thanks for reading that one. Thanks for reading that, Kate. From from what you were saying earlier, when you said so much of, like, that is so vivid to me. And it brings back, just on a personal note, just it brings me to many walks with the dog and thinking and having, like, yourself be able to find yourself again just by being out going for the walk with a dog. So it's, there's so many places in your book, How About Now, where I definitely, you can feel the immediacy of it. And I love how you said you jot down the notes to yourself in a notes app or email it to yourself, or because you, it does feel like the voice is so, clearly, I guess who I guess I am imagining that I might know you better than I do, Kate, because it does feel like it's your voice that's talking to us. Or me.
Yeah, that's the hope, and also that you feel your own life mirrored back to you.
Yes.
Something I love about poetry is that it's listed in the fiction section, because you can really hide behind that. But of course, all my books are just very, very true, and I love that part of it, that I can just say whatever I want to say. And if anyone feels upset by it, I can say, oh, I just made that up. But truly, it's all me.
Do you ever feel like there are things that you don't write about, Kate?
Yeah, I mean, it's usually people in my life that I'm trying to keep protected or private. I'm very much an open book, and whenever I bristle against wanting to write about something, not wanting to write about something, I try to ask myself, is this protecting someone, or am I just trying to protect my own ego? And if it's my own ego, I know that the best path forward is to push through that and to just tell the truth, because that's where the good stuff is. That's where the good art is in every art medium. It's kind of pushing past that ego and telling the truth, which is why I love poetry so much, that really boiled down storytelling. It's also why I love stand-up comedy and music, because you have this really big story you want to tell, but you only have a little bit of time to do it, a page or 2 minutes to tell a story, and you really have to get to the heart of it. And so I think if you're kind of dancing around the truth, it becomes very boring.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And no one wants to read that. And so I think it's really important to ask that question, why don't you want to talk about this? But, you know, there are also a lot of stories that I'd love to tell that aren't mine to share. You know, for example, I have a high school boy, son, and he certainly doesn't want me writing poems about his changing body.
Yes, okay.
I also have, you know, a preteen girl, and, you know, those are not my stories to share. I can tell my side of things and what it's like to be a mother, but there really is limits as far as the stories I can tell about others, but I can tell my own. And I like to joke that I can also say whatever I want about my husband, because I have this prolapse because of him. I've given him 4 children. So he's also, not off limits at all. I can write whatever I want about him.
Fair game. Yeah. Is he one of your beta readers? Like, does he get to read the poems first or no?
No, he's not. He reads it when the book comes out.
Okay.
So I let him have that surprise.
I love how you said it's also about pushing past the ego. Like, you have to ask yourself, you know, about what's stopping it. Kate, how did you start, like, writing? What was were you always writing as a kid? Did you do creative writing classes when you were in school? What was your, like, because this is hard won sort of knowledge, it sounds like, in some ways.
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't know if you've ever met someone and thought, oh, they're such an old soul.
Yeah.
No one's ever said that about me. I'm a very new soul. I have to learn things the hard way over and over again. Lucky for me,
that's one of your poems, too, just to jump in. Yeah. That's one of your poems, New Soul.
Yeah. Lucky for me, I've had a long time, so I've been writing since I could write. I'm a huge nostalgia hoarder, and recently my parents evicted all of the things from their attic back to me and said, you must take these bins and bins of items. So I was able to look through all my old journals starting back until like eight years old,
wow.
being in second grade. And to read those poems I wrote when I was 8 years old, they're all about my dead cats. They kept getting hit on the road, so they're really bummer poems. And then to read the ones I wrote when I was 13 and 16, some really bad poetry, some really horny poetry, but I, just to read all of that, just the confirmation that I've always been trying, and not just poetry, you know, screenwriting was in there, something I still do, short stories, novels, essay, all that writing I've always been trying at and always been playing with, and I've always been writing, and I did study it in college, but it's certainly been in my present in my life from the very beginning.
And Kate, you mentioned, I mean, that's amazing that you have all those journals back, and that you actually, by the sounds of it, like when you started them, when you were your 8-year-old self, you actually wrote through the whole journal and filled up the pages.
Yeah. That was definitely me.
That's so great. I feel like even as a child, I had so many like the horse cover journal, you know, with the little lock and key that, you know, was going to be written in every day. But that was actually, maybe it was more of a diary, and I should have known to start with the poems. I do love that. I love that. And you mentioned screenwriting. Is that a project you're working on currently?
Screenwriting is something I have tried my hand at many times over the years. I worked on a script 2 years ago and probably spent 10 months on it. I think this is a misconception about writers that they just sit down and write something and then it gets published. When instead, failure is such a huge part of writing and a very important muscle to flex over and over again. It's very important to fail, because if you don't leave room for that, it's very difficult to write anything. You really need to be able to throw spaghetti at the wall over and over, or else it's kind of crippling to have. It's kind of like sitting down and being like, okay, now write the next great American novel. That's kind of an impossible task. Instead, you know, having the room to fail and being like, this might be nothing. I've written entire novels that haven't gone anywhere, which I think a lot of people would find to be a huge waste of time. But for me, that is a learning opportunity. That is that's kind of the best thing that you can do is to write things that go nowhere, because it allows for play, and it allows that flexing that muscle. I think is just such an important part of the process.
Oh my gosh. Thank you so much for saying that, Kate, because I feel like you just did a public service announcement for all writers. Seriously. Thank you. Thank you.
Of course.
Hey, let's take a short break and then we'll come back. This break will be a short one, folks. You've got Living Writers today on the program. Kate Baer joining us via phone. I'm T. Hetzel. We'll be back. Welcome back. You've got Living Writers. I'm T. Hetzel, and today I am just so glad to be speaking with poet Kate Bear and hearing poems and talking about process, but poems from How About Now, Kate's latest book out with Harper Perennial. Kate, thanks again for picking the songs from today, too.
Oh, and it's my pleasure. That was my favorite ask of last year, was to have to send a list of songs I love. I could do that every day.
Kate, what about the song we just heard? Because it feels like it's really connecting strongly into some of the family poems.
Yeah, that song is called The Baton by Katie Gavin, and it's a song about mothering yourself and kind of a message to her daughter. And I loved the poetry in that song. There's poetry in song lyrics, obviously, everywhere. And I love that particular poem from Katie.
So far today, when we were emailing a little bit the last week, you had said, are there any poems in particular that you'd like? And I said, no, I really want to hear what poems you would like to read on the day, because I do see this as sort of a time capsule of this moment. And hopefully one day we'll speak again, Kate, too. But what I realized is, because I didn't have the book here today, I've been asking you to read poems. So, Kate, would you mind reading us a couple of poems that you'd like to read?
Sure. This one's called Meanwhile. Meanwhile, at the concert, we show our phones our favorite musician. On vacation, we show them the waves, the children playing in the sand. We say, look, phone, and turn it on ourselves. Look at my face. I'm so old and ratty, we say to our phones. Now look at the sunset, a four-car pileup, a dog in catchments. Must remember this, we say to our phones. Have it when we want it. We will never want it. Mm-hmm. I hear in stills across the sky. Look, we say, pulling our phones from our pockets. You don't want to miss this phone. It would be a shame if you missed all this.
Thanks for reading that one.
Absolutely. I could keep going here. Would you like me to read another one?
Well, what I was just thinking is, like, Kate, why did you choose that one for today?
I chose that one because I've really thought about that a lot this last year, or certainly in the last decade, but especially recently, just the idea of how we are so tethered to our phones, which is for so many reasons. It's not just one thing. It's really a complicated topic for most people. Of course, our algorithms keep us addicted, but it's also our phones are part of how we pay for groceries, how we turn the lights on and off, how we schedule appointments, I've really tried my best, like I know a lot of people are doing, to become a little bit more untethered and back into the real world. I know COVID was really, kind of a setback for us, being kind of down in our couches and stuck in that world, the virtual world, which yes. The virtual world is not all bad. There's a lot of art to find there, but it also can just be really limiting. And something I really enjoyed about being on tour, I was on tour for about a month and a half, and speaking to these large groups of mostly women, was seeing these like book clubs or best friends or sisters and mothers out on a Tuesday night. All the studies show we've never been more disconnected, and not going to live events, not throwing parties, not gathering together in real life. But I was so heartened to see, and I can see that we're hungry for that, yes. To be back together. And I do think moving forward, I do see more urges to kind of put our phones away and be together in the physical world.
Yes. Oh, thank you for choosing that for today. So many lines and moments where it's like the poem makes it like twists to make it so much like the phone is then becoming your like a like another little mini you or another self or something, instead of knowing that you can be enough for the recording, even the record of it all.
Yeah.
Kate, would you read another one?
Sure. This one is called The Bridesmaid Speech, and it is a poem I've read at each event, and probably my most requested and most popular in this book. And I'll read it today. I have known her all her life. And by that I mean I've seen her in the impossible light of girlhood. The spaces in between. The car on the way to the birthday dinner. The moment before the photograph. I have stood outside the bathroom stall, held tight while her shoulders shook with sorrow. I've watched joy arrive, midnight and unexpected, repeated stories until they were my own. It's true there is a cost to this devotion, but I'll let you in on a little secret. There is very little women choose to keep from one another. How lucky are we to know a love like this?
Thanks, Kate. It really is a love poem.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what are these, like, when you say it's the most requested, are people in the audience asking, or are like when you're going to talk with people at the different events?
Both. For sure, both. The moderators always asked, but it was also always brought up in the audience Q&A, and it's been my most shared poem I've ever written on social media and the most bought print, and I know a lot of people have been reading it at their weddings.
Oh, right.
Although I wrote it certainly to be used in that way, but also I wrote it because, you know, we have this like 2-minute window if someone gets married to pledge our love to them. And I thought about all the women who are in my life now that weren't in my life then, and how I still wanted to say those words to them. And how important those some of those women are in my life. You know, I could never be married without my friends. I certainly couldn't mother without them or write without them or honestly breathe without them. And I wanted, you know, I've got books on friendship and poems on friendship in all my books. But I do feel like this one really got to the heart of it the most. Because it is kind of, you know, this declaration and this speech, and I cried when I wrote it. I've never cried when writing a poem ever in my life, because usually it's, you know, kind of a slog. But in this one, I really pictured myself giving that speech to specifically a few women in my life who are just so central and important. And I know a lot of women have been able to connect on that, because I think, you know, just biologically, women are just so connected to each other. I think just that's how we've had to survive in so many ways. And yeah, I really love that poem.
Oh, thanks so much for reading it today, Kate. Thank you. Is there, you know, I've loved our time today, and thank you for being so game for radio, and thank your dad for me too, since he maybe instilled a love of radio in you.
I will.
And being up for like the freeformness of it. Kate, would you mind reading How About Now as a way to sort of end our conversation today?
Absolutely. This piece is called How About Now. We are born dying, which is one way to look at it. Another is to wake up knowing we are made of impossible things. Crystal caves, singing dunes, dark matter held in mortal hope. It's true, time has a way of making lists and ledgers. You say you want a garden, beds of lavender and daffodils. You say we have a lifetime. Love, we're in our lifetime. How about now?
Thanks. Thanks, Kate, for that question and that poetic challenge.
Of course.
Thank you. Everyone, thanks for listening out there. Kate Baer today on Living Writers, How About Now? Thanks to Heather at Harper Perennial. Thanks to Jason Adam Voss for compiling Kate's song picks for today's program. Many, many thanks to Reverend Andrew for being our intrepid engineer today. And Kate, thank you most of all. Thanks for making today what it is. So thank you.
Thank you so much for having me. It was an honor.
Well, hope to speak again sometime. Thanks everyone for listening out there. And thanks to Mom for listening too. I'm T. Hetzel. You've got sports up next. Until next time.
I know what you wanna say. You don't even gotta say it. Just cause it's a game doesn't mean I gotta play it. Yes, I'm the real thing. Yes, I got class. I'll be taking a high road. Fucking living last, last. I like to look pretty, but don't be fooled. I go for broke if I don't like the rules.
Good evening. This is WCBN FM 88.3 Ann Arbor. It is 6 o'clock, which means it's time for your daily sports report. I'm your host today, Paul Englade. You've got a great panel. Today, it's just me and my man, Reynold. Today, talking some basketball, talking some NBA, talking some hoops. How are we doing today, man?
I'm good, Paul. How are you?
I'm like, you know, I'm good. I'm great. Even though Madrid lost today, I've had a rough week. I'm in sports, with pretty much every team I'm associated with losing, except for the Sixers the other night. But let's talk about the NBA and the current trading block. Now, we've already seen Trae Young. He's traded to Washington, and it was kind of a whole thing. It was weird because the value of Trae Young, I think people were expecting a bit more. Right? I don't know if you were expecting a bit more.
I definitely would have been expecting at least a few first round picks. Obviously, Trae Young has caught a lot of flack in the past for his defensive lacks, shall we say, and despite all that, he all NBA in 2021, I believe. He brought the Hawks to a conference finals, call it a fluke or not, he's still an unbelievably talented player. I don't think anybody denies that. Maybe slightly he was overrated at that time, but I still believe that if you're Atlanta, you want to get a first round pick out of it, definitely more than just CJ McCollum for money purposes, and then Corey Kispert. I mean, I think Corey Kispert is great, but